day, the misinformation bill is dead again. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, the Albanese government has dumped its controversial misinformation and disinformation bill, conceding that there is no pathway to getting the proposal passed through the Senate. The Communications Minister, Michelle Rowland, insisted misinformation and disinformation remained a grave concern for democracy, national security and online safety, but said the government would not proceed with the proposal. It's actually the second time Labour has pulled the bill after an initial version also failed to gain support and raised concerns about freedom of speech online. Based on public statements and engagements with senators, it's clear that there is no pathway to legislate this proposal through the Senate, Rowland said on Sunday. Now, as I discussed in a previous show, the misinformation and disinformation bill would have put legal obligations on social media platforms to address false, misleading, or deceptive content, or content reasonably likely to cause serious harm, as well as to equip the Australian Communications and Media Authority with powers to regulate such content. But it was strongly opposed by a wide range of bodies, including human rights organisations, church groups, and libertarian groups, as well as many of the non-government members of parliament. And there was a massive public response through a very high submission count to the Senate inquiry. A first version of the legislation was redrafted in a bid to win wider support, but the second attempt also failed to garner parliamentary backing or assuage wider concerns from critics. The coalition has long pledged to oppose the bill, while all other members of the Senate crossbench had said in recent days that they'd either vote it down or were not yet sufficiently convinced to vote for it. The Australian Human Rights Commission said back in October that although there has been some improvements to the bill, freedom of expression is not sufficiently protected. The dump laws would have given the Australian Communications Media Authority powers to set rules to remove certain speech on platforms, such as content from foreign actors seeking to undermine Australian democracy or that urge people against taking preventative health measures such as vaccines. But of course, it applied pressure to the social media platforms and they will tend to respond for their own commercial ends, which could well be significantly against free speech. Ms. Rowland argued that the bill would have combated seriously harmful content on digital platforms while maintaining freedom of speech protections. I disagree. Mr. Dutton said that the government had failed an attempt to censor free speech online. The withdrawal of this dangerous legislation is a win for free speech and for democracy, Dutton said. No minister and no bureaucrat has a monopoly on truth. And yet Labour's legislation sought to make government and the unelected bureaucrats the arbiters of truth. And of course, it also gave major support for mainstream media against everybody else. But Rowland said that the coalition, who had committed to legislating safeguards when in government, had chosen to place partisanship above any attempt to navigate the public interest. Senator Cash said the coalition's proposal when it was in government was not the same and would have worked with social media companies to ensure that their fact-checking processes were better. Shadow Communications Minister David Coleman said the bill was appalling and should never have been put forward and would have had the effect of suppressing the free speech of Australians as platforms would have censored content to avoid fines. Green Senator Sarah Hanson-Young agreed the government's attempt was badly made. It was with all good intent, this policy, but badly and poorly explained and implemented. The practical implementation was just not there, she said. In fact, speaking on the ABC Insiders programme on Sunday, she said the bill needed to have stronger powers to force platforms to comply and address misinformation and welcomed its withdrawal. Rowland said that the Albanese government would focus on other related issues in online safety, with reforms planned in areas around deep fakes, truth in political advertising, and regulation of artificial intelligence. It's incumbent on democracies to grapple with these challenges in a way that puts the interests of citizens first, she said. which leaves the age of under 16 ban on access to social media still in play. And it does look like this legislation will pass this week, despite major flaws in the bill and concerns it could be a backdoor to wider social media access controls. As I discussed recently, this bill is also deeply flawed, but Labour is after a win, any win, politically speaking, before the election. In fact, in my submission to the Senate inquiry, submissions were only open for 24 hours, I argued that first, free speech is important because freedom of speech is a cherished right in a digital world where views and opinions can be shared freely, but which also may contain content which is harmful. There is rightly a drive to protect those most at risk. That said, as the UN Charter underscores, children also have free speech rights, which must be preserved, and it seems their inalienable rights are being reduced by this bill. My second point was that age verification is not fit for purpose. The method used for age verification must be fit for purpose and not create unintended consequences. In the case of the current proposal, where selected social media platforms will be required to verify the age of accounts so as to block those below 16 years, the unintended consequences are potentially rife. If all social media account users have to provide proof of age so platforms can weed out those below 16 years, it means that data from all users will be required. This is a high price to pay. The alternative path where AI is used to vet accounts is unlikely to be accurate. And recent international experience has shown that people, especially younger people, have an amazing facility to circumvent such controls, thanks to proxies and virtual private networks. So the approach will fail. My third point was that the bill was just too vague, because there are no details within the bill about the approach. Rather, it's left to the social media platforms to devise an appropriate execution path within the given timeframes. It is quite possible we'll end up with a proliferation of methods across platforms, which will be both confusing and expensive. My fourth point was that we need to see this particular piece of legislation in the light of questions around a broader digital control agenda. This bill should not be seen in isolation from the already legislated digital ID, the flawed proposed misinformation and disinformation bill, which of course has now been thrown out, and other digital infrastructure, such as digital payments and central bank digital currency. A coordinated rollout has a high risk of imposing on Australians significant digital controls, and yet there is no discussion about an overall digital architecture or a digital bill of rights. As a result, incremental bills are likely to erode civil liberties, and it risks building out a digital control system over time. Each element needs to be understood within this wider agenda. Better still, we should push towards legislation which outlaws such an agenda. This ultimately becomes an issue of trust in government and their desire to control agendas. My next point was that children can be protected in other ways, a wider focus on appropriate education within schools of the risks and benefits of social media, and appropriate protocols in terms of use of those platforms, together with a robust focus on how to deal with potential abuse, would be a better path. We should also develop approaches to help parents deal with their children's online exposure. For example, apps exist today which can empower parents to filter and control the contents on kids' phones. This should be coupled with a greater focus on real-world experience and education for kids, especially in the arena of sports and outdoor activity. Such funding actually has been radically reduced in the past decade in real terms, thanks to government cuts. And a more holistic, child-centric approach would provide a more enduring path. And my final point was simply this, that the current timetable was politically driven. The short timetable and rushed consideration of the bill means it is likely to be of poor quality. Given the importance of the issues contained in the legislation, a more detailed and longer path is required to ensure the best approach possible is developed over time. Given the proximity of the next election, it appears that political considerations are driving the timeframes, and for the reasons outlined above, the bill in its current guise should not be passed into law. So there you have it. That's my stake in the ground. I'm afraid it won't do much good because they really aren't going through more than the motions with regard to the Senate inquiry, and the bill will be pushed through this week. But it doesn't make it right, and it still leaves the door open for more digital control later. I can't really understand why Labour has chosen this path. Surely there are other more critical issues that they should be focusing on. For example, capping student numbers. Oh, hang on, that's been thrown out. Or indeed, what about gambling reform? Oh no, that's been thrown out too. Seems to me that they're focusing on things which maybe seem important to them, but perhaps don't seem as important to many Australians. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.